And it is time for Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is your connection to local music and more, and we have both music and theater on the show today, beginning with members of the cast of the Rantoul Theater Group's production of A Few Good Men, which gets underway next week, and we'll have a few scenes from that play. Then we'll be talking with Richard Hagland, who is music director of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program based in Springfield, and their concert of all of their orchestras this Saturday, and then also mentioning the community orchestra concert that they sponsor on the 19th of May, with musical selections throughout, of course, beginning with a performance here of some familiar music by Vince Guaraldi. And that was a performance by the Tim Green and his trio Cambia of Vince Guaraldi's Linus and Lucy here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. My first guests on the show are, well, there's six of them sitting in front of me here in our studio. They're all participating in the production of Aaron Sorkin's play A Few Good Men at the Rantoul Theater Group, which opens next Thursday, Friday? The 14th of May runs through the 23rd. And if you've seen the film, and I'm sorry that I haven't. I'm familiar kind of with the gist of it, but that's about all. But it's the same story, right? Mike Nelson is the director of the show.
Yes, and should you have the opportunity to see the play, it will actually work in your favor because the play came before the film.
It did. That was going to be one of my questions. And you took care of that right away. That didn't take much time at all. Excuse me. So folks who are with us here, actually, why don't we go through and sort of identify yourselves. Mike, you're obviously the director, but you're also in the show, right?
Yes, sir. I'm also playing Lieutenant Caffey.
And who was your counterpart in the film?
Tom Cruise.
I knew you were going to say that when you hung your head there.
I'm Jessica Holmes. I'm just filling in for the part of Joe played by Demi Moore in the film.
You filled in for somebody else once, didn't you?
Yes, I'm the fill-in girl.
and Larry Smith is the fill-in boy here.
In this particular play, I'm the military advisor.
So you are in the play?
No, I'm behind the play, because I've been in the military for 27
years.
Oh,
I see what you mean. All right.
Right.
But you're playing a role today, but not in the play. And who's your role today?
The judge, Judge Randolph.
And does he have a famous counterpart in the film?
No, not really. He's a well-known actor, but his name eludes me. I haven't seen him very much.
One of those character actors that nobody remembers the name of.
Yeah, my name's Jeremy Larson. Playing the role of Lieutenant Kendrick.
And are you actually in that role in the play?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know you're not a fill-in today, in other words.
No, unfortunately, I'm not a fill-in. Kiefer Sutherland would be the relationship there.
Yeah, you're taller than he is. I've heard he's a rather small person. Right up there with Tom, right down there, I guess, with Tom Cruise,
right.
Among the famous people who aren't very tall. This is neither here nor there. Next.
Yeah, my name's John Daniels, and I guess I'm playing the role of Colonel Nathan Roy Jessup.
You guess you are.
Yeah.
How long have you been rehearsing?
Several weeks now.
And you're still not certain which role you're playing?
Well, unless I quit.
Doesn't sound very encouraging. And do you have a well-known counterpart in the film?
Yeah, I'm trying to fill Jack Nicholson's shoes.
Oh, good luck. Yeah, right. And this guy I know, he happens to work here at WILL.
Yes, Jeff Bossert. You may hear me on the other, well, on both signals now, occasionally.
That's right.
A news person here at WIOL. I am Captain Jack Ross, the Marine prosecutor who has a lot of confrontations in court with the defense team, and my counterpart in the film is Kevin Bacon.
Okay, so we have some stars in front of us right here. Give us the, Mike, why don't you give us the rundown of the story for those like myself who haven't seen the film, haven't seen the play before, and, what's the gist of it?
The gist of it is that two Marines were ordered to give a code red, a within the unit disciplinary measure to a member of their unit. Things went wrong, and the Marine being disciplined died. And rather than everyone owning up to their part in it, it was covered up, and the Navy lawyers were prodded, most especially by Joanne Galloway, to look deeper into this, and eventually they discover the part that all these other gentlemen that we just talked about played in it.
And this seems like a fairly timely play to resurrect. Just given, it seems like this is a common story.
Well, or taking responsibility for your actions, I don't really think goes out of style. So
that's also true, whether it's in the military or otherwise. It's just
absolutely
that they get to be a sort of high profile in a lot of ways. And we, of course, won't say if there is even such a thing as a happy ending to this kind of a situation. Why don't you introduce the first scene, because I know you brought a few of them along, and let's just launch into that. We're going to have
the first scene is when Lieutenant Kendrick is called to the stand during the trial of the Marines who committed this act. He was their platoon commander, and they're going to ask him about his part in this incident.
Lieutenant Kendrick, have you previously been sworn in?
I have.
Could you state your full name, rank, and correct billet for the record, please?
Lieutenant Jonathan James Kendrick, Executive Officer, Rifle Security Company Windward, NAV Base, Guantanamo Bay.
Thank you, Lieutenant. You may have a seat.
Lieutenant Kendrick, in your opinion, was Private Santiago a good Marine?
I'd say he was about average.
Lieutenant, you co-signed three fitness reports on Santiago. On all three reports, you indicated a rating of below average.
Yes. Private Santiago was below average. I didn't see the need to trample on a man's grave.
We appreciate that, but you're under oath now, and I think, unpleasant as it may be, we just all soon hear the truth.
Lieutenant, I'm aware of my oath.
The Marine Corps has a slogan. What is it?
Unit, Corps, God, Country.
And what does that slogan mean?
It's our order of priorities, our code.
Would Private Santiago be as likely to adhere to that code as someone who received a rating of exceptional?
No, he would not.
Lieutenant, these are the last three fitness reports you signed for Lance Corporal Dawson and PFC Downey. Private Downey received three straight marks of exceptional. Lance Corporal Dawson received two marks of exceptional, but on the most recent report, dated June 9th of this year, he was given an overall rating of below average. It's this last report that I'd like to discuss for a moment.
That would be fine.
Lance Corporal Dawson's ranking after infantry training school was 4.0. Records indicate that well over half the class has since been promoted to full corporal, while Dawson has remained a Lance Corporal. Was Dawson's promotion held up because of this last fitness report?
I'm sure it was.
Lieutenant, do you recall why Dawson was given such a poor grade on this report?
I'm sure I don't. Lieutenant, I have many men in my command. I write many fitness reports.
Do you recall an incident involving a PFC Curtis Barnes who'd been found stealing liquor from the officers' club?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. I recall thinking very highly of the private and not wanting to see his record tarnished by a formal charge.
You preferred instead to handle it within the unit.
Object.
I remind the court that Lieutenant Kendrick is appearing as an adverse witness and that the rules of cross and not direct examination apply.
Objection overruled.
Any real leader will tell you that the best way to handle a low-level problem is to let those on a low level handle it.
Lieutenant, did you order Corporal Dawson and two other men to make sure that Private Barnes received no food or drink except water for a period of 10 days?
That's a distortion of the truth. Private Barnes was placed on barracks restriction. He was given water and vitamin supplements, and I can assure you at no time was his health in any danger.
Please, the court, the government objects to this entire line of questioning as argumentative and irrelevant badgering of the witness.
Lieutenant, I remind you that you are now questioning a Marine officer with an impeccable service record.
Thank you, Judge.
You're welcome. Now, I'm overruling this objection, and the defense may continue its line of questioning.
Lieutenant, you said you prefer to handle these situations within the unit, rather than going through what this court might consider to be proper authorities. Is that right?
I beg your pardon?
Would you like me to repeat the question?
Proper authorities?
Yes.
Lieutenant, I have two books at my bedside. The Marine Code of Conduct and the King James Bible. The only proper authorities I'm aware of are my commanding officer, Nathan R. Jessup, and the Lord our God.
Lieutenant, at your request, I can ask that the record reflect your lack of recognition of this court as a proper authority.
Move to strike.
Counsel, I'd advise against testing the limits of my patience.
Yes, sir. Lieutenant, the sort of disciplinary action you preferred in the matter of Curtis Barnes, is there a name for it?
Object!
It's called Code Red and it works, and it's the business of no one other than the members of Rifle Security Company.
Well, we've got that straightened out anyway.
I would certainly hope so.
Would a Marine with an overall rating of exceptional know what a Code Red is?
He sure would.
Now let me ask you this, Lieutenant. Was Lance Corporal Dawson given a rating of below average because you learned he was sneaking food to Private Barnes?
Lance Corporal Dawson was found to be below average because he committed a crime.
What crime did he commit?
He disobeyed...
Lieutenant Kendrick, what crime did he commit?
He disobeyed an order.
He disobeyed an order that you gave for Private Barnes to receive a Code Red.
Yes.
And because he did, because he exercised his conscience, because he made a decision, he was punished. Is that right? Lieutenant?
No, because he disobeyed an order.
Yeah, but it wasn't a real order, was it? After all, it's peacetime. He wasn't being asked to secure a hill or radio for battalion aid or advance on a beachhead. I mean, surely a Marine with Dawson's outstanding service record can be trusted to determine on his own which orders are the really important orders and which orders might, say, be illegal.
No, it wasn't Corporal Dawson's prerogative.
A lesson he learned after the Curtis Barnes incident, am I right?
I would certainly think so.
You know so, don't you, Lieutenant?
Object.
Withdrawn. No more questions.
Did you have a meeting with the members of 2nd Platoon on the evening of 7 July?
Yes, I did.
And what did you tell them, Lieutenant?
That Private Santiago was being transferred off the base at 0200, and he was not to be touched.
Thank you, Lieutenant Kendrick.
And that was the conclusion of scene one that we have here. Well, not scene one in the show, but the first of a couple of scenes we're going to hear on the show today from Aaron Sorkin's play A Few Good Men. We have actors from the Rantoul Theater Group who are putting this play together, and it opens on the 14th of May. How long has the play been in rehearsal right now?
2 months.
2 months. Is that typical rehearsal period for shows with RTG?
Yes, it is.
And how do you go about choosing the plays and why the selection of this one?
We really don't have a very formal process. We try to select a season that has comedy, drama, something for the kids to be involved in, as well as a holiday show. Beyond that, it's generally... We ask the directors what shows are they interested in, what are they passionate about, what do they believe in. We want them to be as passionate about what they're doing as possible. So
and you're the director.
Mm-hmm.
So what beliefs and passions made you bring this show up? I gather this is the drama of the season.
Yes, it is. I've always been a fan of this piece. And I just really... I really like the idea about what really is honor, you know, what is integrity. And you see a lot of the bravado of the Marines in Guantanamo Bay throughout the play and also in the movie. And they talk tough and they do a lot of these things, but at the end of the day, covering up, you know, mistakes, shifting the blame to other people, they're not really as honorable as they are claiming to be. And along the way, the Navy folks who are, you know, lawyers in Washington, there's no threat, there's no danger, there's no, you know, defending the country there in a physical manner. So they're kind of flipping about, you know, their jobs and what it means to be in the military. And they sort of learn a bit of a lesson about... you know, the value of the uniform they're wearing and the principles that it stands for.
So when the, whichever the characters it was, that I forget now, was it Jeremy, yours?
Kendrick. Lieutenant Kendrick, right.
Who gave the code, it sounds like the code only goes so far when somebody's backed against a wall.
Yeah.
Unless you have truly honorable people.
That's a fact.
And just out of curiosity, since, again, I haven't seen the film, how close does the film adhere to the play, since the play did come first?
It's an interesting situation, actually, because the gentleman who wrote the play then went on to write the screenplay for the movie. And he had the opportunity to see the play performed on Broadway for several years and was given the chance then to sort of fix things that he didn't like or wasn't as happy with. So there is a, I would say 75% to 80% is the same. But when he wrote the movie script, he added a little bit more maturity to some of the characters. And that's something we've been trying to bring back to the play script.
Well, and it seems like whoever did the casting certainly found some incredibly powerful actors for that film. It's one that I've always missed seeing. And I'm curious how many of you who are playing characters represent, you know, where there was one of those actors in the film representing your character. Are you doing any basing of your own characterization on those actors, or do you feel at all intimidated by, you know,
they're big shoes to fill.
The likelihood that people may have seen the film before they get in here.
Absolutely. I think anyone would tell you that there's a little basis there. You got to have some sort of a line to kind of judge yourself on. But you know, directors, at least RTG is the first group that I've been a part of, and they're good on making sure you make it your own. It's fair to use that as a judgment, but be sure to make it your own. So that's part of the creativeness that is theater. So they allow you to be yourself.
Yeah, what about yourself, Mike, as the Tom Cruise of the group and also the director? I mean, how do you direct yourself, for example?
Well, it's a challenge. I'm not the most formal director, compared to some of the other folks that I've worked with in the past. But I spend a lot of time talking with the actors about how they feel about the scene and you know, what things that they found. There's a certain amount, especially in a play like this, of push and pull when you know, the words are written, you know, for there to be conflict between a lot of these people. And you can tell if that push and pull is happening when you're up there. So that kind of directs me into who I need to talk with more about why we're not feeling that in a certain scene. Beyond that, I have Larry, who's retired Air Force, who's been an advisor. John, who's playing Colonel Jessup, also was in the Marine Corps. And then I have an assistant director. And so all of them have been very valuable in giving me feedback on how to behave.
John, since you were in the Marines, I'm curious, what's your reaction to the play overall?
Well, I really like the play. I really like the movie. I think the Marines got a bum rap in it. And so I would like to see the movie end a different way.
We won't talk about how it ends, of course, because we want people to come to play. But I gather it wasn't favorable to the Marines.
Yeah, not in my opinion, but...
But seriously, I mean, how does it sort of jibe with your own experience of the idea of honor in the Marine Corps? I mean, nobody wants to see their honor impugned, whether it's on screen or on stage, but...
Right, and I think it's more a matter of perspective. I don't think the Marines' honor was impugned in the play. I think the whole situation should have been handled in a completely different, you know, way to come out with a different outcome, I guess you would say. The speeches and the lines that come out in the movie and in the play, you just yank at your heartstrings no matter what branch of service you're in. And so I think either way, it does justice to military.
And do we have you in the next scene here?
No.
He's in the third and final scene that we have.
Okay, well, we should probably move along with the next scene.
All right, the second scene is a heated argument between the Navy defense lawyers and the Marine prosecutor in trying to reach a plea agreement ahead of time while they're trying to uncover the facts and make that determination if they're going to go to court with this or if they're going to try to come up with a settlement.
And we have,
that should happen.
We have actors from Rancho Theater Group's production of the play A Few Good Men opening next week on the 14th of May on Live and Local.
You talk to the other guys in the platoon.
I don't need to.
Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, they all say the same thing. Kendrick specifically said not to touch Santiago.
They weren't there. He dismissed the platoon. You talked to Kendrick.
I already talked to Kendrick. He denies everything.
You talked to Kendrick? Why did you think there was anything to deny?
Joanne?
I had a suspicion.
You had a...
It's not important now.
You had a suspicion, and you chose not to share it with anyone?
It was just a suspicion.
You're in violation of about 14 articles of the Code of Ethics.
This is Joanne Galloway. She's very pleased to meet you.
Ebenezer Galloway.
She's Downey's attorney.
And you're about 30 seconds away from a felony evidence tampering charge.
You want to charge me with something?
How long were you gonna...
Joe, this is another one of those situations.
No, no, no. You ask him how he's getting his information. 12, 24, 72 hours before...
You want to charge me with something, lady?
Let's settle down here, huh?
Please, I'm begging you. Charge me with something.
Hey, hey, hey. In the interest of justice now, everybody, take a deep knee bend.
Kendrick had a platoon meeting, and he told the men what Santiago had done, and he told them that Santiago was not to get a code red. I have Kendrick's deposition as well as the depositions of every other man at that meeting.
Kendrick's lying, Jack.
I think you're right. I think he's lying. But so what? Neither of us can prove it.
I'm not sure about that. Why does a Marine colonel resign his commission after 21 years?
We'll never know.
You don't think I can subpoena Markinson?
You can try, but you won't find him. You know what Markinson did for 17 of his first 21 years in the Corps? CIC, Danny. Counterintelligence. Markinson's gone. There is no Markinson. RSC is an effective unit. Colonel Jessup Starr is on the rise. They let me bend over backwards to spare that base and the Corps any embarrassment. So this is it. Aggravated assault. 7 years. All things considered, I'd say it's not a bad week's work for the defense.
He's bluffing. He's got a PR problem and he can't afford to go to court.
Commander, every time you open your mouth, you're taking years off the clients' lives. Now shut up. I'm sorry, Jack.
No, she's absolutely right. I can't afford to go to court. Lucky for you, huh, Danny? You're turning green at the thought of it. No, going to court would be bad for me. It'd be bad for the Marine Corps, and I'd be held responsible. You go to court, and your boys go away for 30 years.
Jack.
Are we clear on that? We have to be clear on that. Once we go outside this room, I have to go all the way. They'll be charged with murder. And in a courtroom, you lose this case. Please, I'm the judge advocate, and I don't think your men belong in jail, but I don't get to make that decision. I represent the people without passion, you see? And the people have a case. You get me written statements from the defendants, they do 6 months. Without the statements, it's 7 years. Believe a thing this woman tells you, they won't see the light of day until they're 59. That's the end of this negotiation. From this moment on, we're on the record. Tomorrow morning, 9:45. I'll see you at the arraignment.
That sounds like there's some heated passions on the part of the various characters. Jeff Bossert is Jack Ross here. How do you transfer your role as a news guy who has to report occasionally on things like this and many other things, mostly local, but many other things, to being an actor on the stage, doing a role that, you know, could well have been something that was in the news?
I've had this, I don't know, it's a conflict or whatever. I guess this is the first time I've actually considered it a conflict, because prior to this other roles, while I was working in radio news, we're usually in some lighthearted musical. But I think it's a matter of, being a fan of the movie and the play and thinking about being militaristic and sort of just... disappearing into a character and I guess not spending my time as sort of John sort of alluded to, wondering maybe what would happen in real life with this and how much of this is just it's somewhat, I guess, a dramatic effect from Aaron Sorkin written play. That'd be quite interesting if a situation like this actually you know, surfaced. And
it actually did.
It did.
Aaron Sorkin's sister, I believe, was a JAG lawyer, and this event happened. The young man who was assaulted did not die, but the basic facts of the case did occur, and that's where he got the idea for it.
And he just dramatized it and, of course, turned it into a piece of entertainment, which is where a lot of this comes from, the drama. One more scene, and we finally get to draw John Larson, Don Daniels, into this.
The young Marine who is the victim in all of this has been writing letters trying to get transferred off of the base in Cuba, and this fact has now come to the attention of Colonel Jessup and his officers, who are the commander of the base.
Yes, sir?
Tom, get the president on the phone. We're surrendering our position in Cuba.
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute, Tom.
Sir?
Don't call the president. Maybe that's the wrong thing to do. Maybe we should consider this for a second. Maybe instead of surrendering the fight because a Marine made a mistake, maybe we should train Santiago. What do you think? I'm just spitballing here, but maybe we, as officers, have a responsibility to this country to see that the men charged with its security are trained professionals. Maybe we have that responsibility to other members of the Corps. Yes. Yes, I'm certain I once read something like that. See, and now I'm trying to think about how I'd feel if some Marine got hurt or killed because a PFC in my command didn't know what the hell he was doing. And I'm trying to think about how the other members of his unit might feel, putting their lives in the hands of a man they can't count on. And this brief meditation has brought me around to thinking that your suggestion of transferring Private Santiago off the base, while expeditious and certainly painless, might not be, in a manner of speaking, the American way. Kendrick stays at Windward. Santiago stays on the wall.
Colonel, that's a mistake. This Santiago incident isn't going to go away by itself.
Tom, thank you. That's all.
Yes, sir.
Matthew, I believe I will have a word with you alone for just a moment. Jonathan, you're dismissed. Why don't you and I have dinner at the Oak Club, say 19:30?
I'd be delighted, sir. Thank you.
That's all. Matthew, sit, please.
Thank you, sir.
What do you think of Kendrick?
He's a good man.
I think he's kind of a weasel myself.
Yes, sir.
But he's an awfully good officer. And in the end, we see eye to eye on the most efficient way to run a Marine Corps unit. We're in the business of saving lives, Matthew. With every degree that we allow ourselves to move off the mark of perfection as officers, more people die. That's a responsibility that I take pretty seriously. Because I absolutely believe that simply taking a Marine who's not yet up to the job and packing him off to another unit puts lives in danger. Matthew, sit back down. We've known each other for a while now. We went to the academy together. We got commissioned together. We served our tours in Vietnam together. But I've been promoted with greater speed and success through the chain of command. Now, if that's a source of tension or embarrassment for you, well, I don't give a hoot. I'm in the business of saving lives, Colonel Markinson. Don't ever question my orders in front of another officer.
Somehow, I don't know if it's because I learned this during the, you know, while we were sitting here, but just knowing, John, that you were in the Marine Corps suddenly gave a gravity to your speech there that it might not have had otherwise. How much do you feel like you're sort of transporting yourself back?
Well, you know, through the rehearsals, I've started having a lot more memories of my time in than I've had in a long time, and I, a lot more aggression, I guess, is coming out doing my job and at home and everything, and so it sort of transports me back quite a bit, And that's a good thing because, you know, I like to remember stuff.
And do you think that your character is a sympathetic character?
A sympathetic character? I think my character is someone who thinks everything should be going their way, and that's the way it should be because I'm right on everything, and I have to fight against everybody else who's trying to make things go the wrong way.
The wrong way from your point of view.
Right.
Which is not your way. Yeah, so you're sort of a fly in the ointment, in other words.
Yeah, I think everybody else is flies.
Well, we've had some scenes here from the play A Few Good Men, and I was also thinking while you were just doing that scene, what my own personal reaction would be, how it would be different watching you do these scenes in uniform.
Absolutely.
Rather than just, you know, you're sitting here in your radio clothes in pretty much whatever you want, and you know, I've got to make a leap of faith, maybe even more than the listeners do, to imagine you in the character, because I'm just seeing you in casuals and holes in the jeans and all that stuff. I hope that this has given some idea of listeners of the drama and the tension and some controversy that's in this play. And I thank you all for coming in and stopping in on Live and Local. We have from the Ransell Theater Group, director and playing the role of Daniel Caffey is Mike Nelson. And in the guest role of Joanne Galloway,
Jessica Holmes.
I got the Jessica part, and it's the one I didn't write down. Jessica Holmes, who is a return guest. A few of you are return guests on the show. Jeff Bossert in the role of Jack Ross is with us, and Jeremy Larson as Jonathan Kendrick. And John Daniels is Nathan Jessup, and also filling in a few different roles, including the judge, is Larry Smith, also a return guest on the show. Thanks again. And the show goes from May 14th to the 23rd in Rantoul at the Grissom Hall Theater. And for tickets, what does one have to do?
Call 892-1121 and leave a message, or you can go online at www.rtgonline.org.
For Rantoul Theater Group, online.org. Thanks very much, and we have coming up Richard Haglund, director of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program, about their concert this Saturday in Springfield. It's Live and Local. Flutist James Galway with pianist Philip Mall in the concertino for flute and piano by Cécile Chaminade. That is one of the pieces that is going to be performed by one of the concerto winners at the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Concert this Saturday at 1:30 at First United Methodist Church on Cokie Mill Road in Springfield. And Carly Pyland is the name of the solo. She, of course, will not be playing with piano, but will be playing with the orchestra. And we'll have a conversation with the conductor of the top orchestras and the director of the program, Richard Haglund, in just a moment here on Live and Local. Our program today is made possible with support from these business partners: Provena Medical Group, Risk Management Commodities of Lafayette, and Springfield Electric of Springfield. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. We certainly thank you. And we say thanks to all the Friends of WILL who do support this program and these radio stations. Support for our broadcast also comes from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign. Along with their dinner menu, tapas are served every evening until 2 a.m. Lunch is also served on Friday from 10:30 to 2:30 and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Information on menus and wine and beer lists are at RadioMariaRestaurant.com. And my guest for this portion of Live and Local is Richard Haglund. He is assistant conductor of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra and also the music director for Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony, which by its name you would think there was just one orchestra, but in fact, there are, what, three orchestras and a couple of extra things?
We actually have five different orchestras, and we have over 300 students involved in the program now.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And so we started 148 young string players on violin, viola, cello, and bass, and they're going to start the concert, and they've just recently started using the bow, but that's a very short portion of the concert, but it's a lot of fun for them to come into the First United Methodist Church and see over 1,000 people out in the audience waiting for them, and they get a great thrill out of that. It's kind of funny, there's the battalion of parents taking photographs before we begin. I kind of feel a little bit like a celebrity because all the flashes going off. It seems like the paparazzi are there taking pictures of their sons and daughters. But they are going to play some arrangements that they've been working on all year long. And they've come together from 9 different schools. So we have 9 different elementary schools that are involved in our Starter Strings program. And the first time they came together was in December for our winter concert, and they'll be coming together again on Saturday, November the 8th, for their spring concert. And after them, we are going to have our next level of orchestra, which is called our Junior Strings, which is conducted by Shannon Schultz, who's from Normal, Illinois. And she's a wonderful teacher and educator and cellist, and she puts together these kids and kind of takes them to the next level, where they start playing independent melodic lines on the violin, viola, cello, and bass, and they have a little bit more independence on each of their parts. Then we have our first level of full orchestra, which is called the preparatory orchestra. And this is where we involve winds, brass, and percussion with the string families. And some of these students have been playing for a year or two, some for a little bit more, but they have a wonderful kind of Czech suite that they've prepared, and that's going to be one of the pieces that they're highlighted with. Merle Isaac put together a Czech folk song suite that's really interesting, and the kids really enjoyed working it up. They're also going to play the Song of Joy, or Ode to Joy, which Beethoven made so popular in his 9th symphony, and they're going to kind of surprise the audience with a little almost choreography with that piece. You don't think of orchestra and choreography, but they're going to do a little bit with that. Our next level orchestra, which is called the Concert Orchestra, has prepared two wonderful arrangements of well-known classical compositions. First, three movements from Wagner's Tannhäuser, and they have three definitely contrasting sections from the Tannhäuser, and the cellos are going to be featured in the middle movement, and they've been working very hard on their excerpt. And then the second piece that they'll perform is the Hungarian Dance number 5 by Brahms, and an arrangement of that, which is wonderful for them learning how to play with a conductor and with an ensemble, because there's so many tempo changes in that piece, and it has to be instantaneous. And so they've worked very hard, and they sound really good on both of those arrangements. Finally, the symphony orchestra is going to play standard repertoire. They're going to start out with Offenbach's Orpheus in the Underworld. And a lot of people will recognize the piece as the Can-Can, but actually the Orpheus in the Underworld is based on the ancient Greek idea of Orpheus going to the underworld to seek his beloved and woo the gods to release her after she's been bitten by the snake and taken to the underworld. And we know it as the Can-Can, but it was actually originally intended as a part of the dramatic suite. And the orchestra has really enjoyed working that up. Then we're going to feature two of our performers. We had a concerto competition in January in which 9 of our students competed for a winning spot to play along with the symphony orchestra. The first one is Carly Pyland, who is going to play Cécile Chaminade's concertino for flute and orchestra. Cécile Chaminade is a female composer who wrote Clairhaut Suite, and as well as some other very interesting works. But this is really a showpiece for the flute. It's just all in one movement, and it's a wonderful chance for Carly to show off on flute. And then we are going to play the first movement of the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto, where Mads Negro is going to perform And she's going, both of the soloists are performing from memory. They're going to get up there in front of the symphony orchestra and just show off and have a great time doing it. And I know that the audience is really going to enjoy both of those things. The symphony orchestra is going to conclude their portion of the concert with Alexander Borodin's Polovetsian Dances number 17. And this is a wonderful work that's done both with choir and without choir. And we won't be doing it with choir, but it's really a wonderful showcase for the whole orchestra. The clarinets have some wonderful licks in it, and the strings get to have a lot of fun with it. And it's got a very climactic ending. Then I'm going to combine the community orchestra, the symphony orchestra, and the concert orchestra for a mass orchestra piece. We're going to have over 150 musicians on the stage at the First United Methodist Church, and we are going to do an arrangement from the Firebird Suite by Merle Isaac of the Dance Infernale and the Bearsusan Finale from Stravinsky's Firebird. And all the groups have been working on this, and we had one rehearsal on Monday, and it was so fun to have all of those musicians together and making a wonderful, wonderful sound. So it's $5 for adults. All kids are admitted for free. It's this Saturday, the 8th, at 1:30 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Springfield. It's the big church behind Lowell's. Please bring your kids. This is a kid-friendly event. If kids are interested in maybe pursuing an instrument, this is going to give them a chance to see all the different instruments being played as well as different levels of musicians. Then the next thing on my roster is on Wednesday, the 19th, we have the community orchestra here in Springfield, which is 65 adult musicians from various backgrounds. They're doctors, they're lawyers. Some people studied music in college, but it's mostly quote-unquote amateur musicians, but they've been working all year basically since January on this literature, and we have prepared Sibelius's Finlandia, the first movement of the Haydn Trumpet Concertos with Michael Withrow performing that, the Cimarosa Concerto for Two Flutes, the first movement of that with two of our local flutes. Cindy Gerritsen and Scott Vogel are going to perform that. We are going to play excerpts from Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, part of the first movement, part of the second, part of the third, and then the whole finale. And that's really a barn burner. It's really a great, great piece, and we've really worked it up to tempo. And that concert is free and open to the public on Wednesday the 19th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. And so we really hope that the community will come out and enjoy a wonderful evening of music with the community orchestra on Wednesday the 19th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hoagland Center for the Arts for free, or on Saturday, May 8th with the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony at 1:30 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church. That's the big church off of Cokie Mill Road behind Lowell's. And, Kevin, we just got a great couple concerts coming up. I'm really looking forward to it, and it's a wonderful way to end the year.
Richard Haglund, conductor of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony and its music director, and about their programs this Saturday and then on the 19th. And as he mentioned, the final work on of the symphony portion of the program before they do the massed orchestras is from Stravinsky's ballet The Firebird. Here is the Infernal Dance of King Kaché, performance here by the Bastille Opera Orchestra, conducted by Myung-Won Chung.
Thank you.